Welcome to Fitness Disrupted, a production of iHeartRadio. I am Tom Holland, and this is Fitness Disrupted. Getting close to 2 years. 2 years of doing this podcast gets better and better with each and every month. And one reason it gets better is hearing from you. Hearing from you, questions, comments. So many of you have reached out over that two-year period. And as the audience has grown, so have the number of questions. And I love it. And if I'm being honest, as I always am, I just have a great audience, a smart audience, a really, really smart audience. And I think part of the reason for that is that I'm not putting out what so many other podcasts are putting out. You know, the pseudoscience, the pushing of supplements and products that are sketchy at best. So if you're looking for that quick solution, this is not the show for you. Although I'm going to give you takeaways like, you know, exercises, little short workouts you can do right away, advice that, yes, actionable, really helpful advice. And when you follow a handful of those things and more over time, your results are going to be incredible. And I've heard from many of you who have done just that. But no, this isn't a show about quick fixes or bogus claims. This is the real deal. This is science. This is experience. And I just love the audience that is following this now. I love you and the questions you ask. And so, yes, listener mailbag number seven. And this is 11 awesome questions of all different types, but just amazing questions. There's not one question, I'm thinking back now, that I have received that isn't great, because there are no dumb questions. And hopefully I answer many with the shows themselves, but it takes a long time for many of the concepts and just topics to sink in. I get that. I've talked about why, you know, every Christmas I get 3 textbooks from my wife: exercise phys, a sports nutrition, and something to do with sports psychology, with behavior, with motivation. Many of the same concepts over and over and over again. But when you read them numerous times written in different ways, things sink in differently. I mean, let's face it. We need to move more and eat better, right? We all pretty much know that. But something's going to resonate. Something's going to hit home that changes behavior, that makes you understand the concept, but it's not right away. So you need to hear it many different times in numerous different ways. So it's a long-winded way of saying, keep asking the same questions, because I get it. I get it. So yeah, just a great handful of questions, 11 in total. And for those of you who may be starting your first listener mailbag show with this one, number 7, a little different from other shows in that I equate this to being at a cocktail party when I'm around friends who know what I do, or people ask, and I tell them inevitably, I get these questions. And I love what I do. And I often say, listen to my podcast now, because we have covered so many. I have covered so many of the questions, but I love to answer them. But that's why this show is a little different in that it's kind of a quick fire way. So I have, like, you know, 8 to 10 bullet points underneath each question. But this is as if you came up to me at a cocktail party and asked me this question. And I'm going to give you, hopefully, I always go a little longer than I want to, but especially because we have 11 questions, I'm going to try to keep it concise, couple minutes at most. And oftentimes that's all you need. And let me just finish by saying there are topics in these questions that I have and will go into much greater depth in separate podcasts. But for the purposes of this show, you asked a question, I'm going to answer it in a few minutes or less, and then go much deeper at a different time. All right, there you have it. Quick break. When we come back, Listener mailbag number 7. We'll be right back. And we are back. Listener mailbag number 7 is this episode. Awesome questions all over the place, which is fantastic. We've got motivation, we've got exercise, we've got nutrition, we've got it all. And challenging questions, including the first one. And I put this right up front to just start with a bang, right? So for those runners out there, this question, very simple. Can you please talk about runner's stomach? I can't find a lot of information on this subject. Now, runner's stomach, and again, I obviously have to make assumptions because I can't ask any follow-up questions. So apologies if I get it wrong, but I think most often I get it right as far as what you're asking about. So runner's stomach, for those of you who are confused, most people have had it, right? When you run, it's basically GI distress, gastrointestinal distress. And it's super, super, super common. Many different terms for it. One is runner's trots, and that is going a little further and telling you, you know, what the GI distress leads to, but super common. Super common. And let me say this, that, you know, I've written a handful of books. My sports nutrition book is Swim, Bike, Run, Eat. And yes, it's for triathletes specifically, but it applies to runners as well, to pretty much all athletes. So I would encourage, if you have questions and want to go a little deeper, Swim, Bike, Run, Eat. It's all about sports nutrition and basically fueling your activity. Because carbs and fats and protein and hydration don't really change, they don't, from sport to sport. We can use that broad overview and paint that with a broad brush. Hydration, refueling, energy from carbohydrate, all that kind of stuff is in that book. I had insanely bad GI issues for years when I was really getting into racing. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me. And, you know, it actually got kind of crazy, but not no need to go into that here. I figured it out slowly. It took time. So the shorter answer to this is that was the hardest book I've had to write. Why? Because it is so individualized. Yes, carbohydrates and fats and proteins do certain things scientifically. Same with hydration and sodium and sports drinks and all those things. But what works for you is what works for you. So that's why when I get the question, what should I eat before a workout? It depends on so many things. The length of your workout, what you're doing, your goals. But most of all, what your stomach can tolerate. I found out, and I'm still figuring out, but later in life, my body doesn't like lactose. Later in life, I don't think my body likes peanut butter, which is crushing, because that was one of my favorite things. But I have found that those GI issues, and again, it took a long time because you have to experiment. And that is the short takeaway to this question, is that you got to experiment and it's going to take some time. And ideally, what you will do is try the same thing several times, keep a log on how you feel, and try things multiple times. Just because something doesn't work one time or does work one time doesn't mean it will. But, you know, I spoke with my new GP doctor about this very subject when I first saw her for the first time, and we basically came to the same conclusion and agreed that when you go to Whole Foods, stay away from things that are, you know, processed and, you know, have multiple ingredients, bananas, these are the better things, fruit, oatmeal, you know, toast, simple things, those generally work better for people. So you have to find what works for you. And I know it's kind of a horrible answer in that I can't give you a definitive reason for runner's trots. And by the way, and for runner's stomach, if anyone says to you, here's exactly what it is, no. I mean, it's similar to cramping, the etiology of cramping. Yes, we have some ideas and there's some things you can do, obviously. But it's different for different people. So you should go to simple foods, simple, simple foods. And listen, for short runs, you may not need to have anything in there. I'll finish up with this. And again, we'll always go long and try to tighten these up. There used to be something called carbo forces. I wrote about this in my marathon and triathlon, first triathlon books. And it was just straight carbohydrate. And I used to use that before Ironman and marathons. It was so easy on my stomach. It was liquid. I actually met a pro triathlete from Yugoslavia back in the day, 1999 in New Zealand. And he had a case of these in his room. And those worked for me because it was simple on my stomach. It was carbohydrate. I needed that fuel. And this is obviously for longer distance races and events. But it worked. So carbohydrate is generally what you want before activity to fuel your body, quick energy, depending on, again, what your specific workout will be. But you have to experiment. You have to figure out what works for you. And one final point, this is a great time and reason to go work with a sports nutritionist. 1, 2, 3 sessions or so. Someone like, yes, Wendy Earlbeck, who I've had on the show. And now because of the internet and Zoom and things like that, you can have access to some of the best people no matter where you live. So that's where I'm going to leave it. It's specific. You got to experiment. It can get better. I mean, I had it really bad for, you know, longer than I care to admit, but it took me a while to figure it out because I had to slowly figure out what worked and what didn't work for me. There you go. All right. All right, try to tighten these up. Can you give us your thoughts on inversion tables? Don't own one. Have tried them. Have never purchased one. Have had clients who have used them and liked them. If they don't hurt you, which I don't think they do in my experience and you know, research, that's a good thing. They make lots of claims depending on which table you're buying from whom. And so inversion tables, for those of you who don't know, and again, I'm assuming this is what the person meant, but you know, where you get on that table and you hang upside down like a bat, right? And they talk about back pain and gravity and your spine getting compressed throughout the day. And this is a great way to basically stretch out, you know, use gravity in a different way. Gravity is pulling us down. Well, flip it and maybe that will help you. So if I could follow up with this person, I'd say, why are you doing it? Is it back pain? Is that the reason you're doing it? Quite often that is. And let me just read you, pulled a great line from the Spine Center of Baton Rouge. And I think this, I know that this summarizes my thoughts exactly. They say, and I quote, any medical practitioner who has ever treated a significant number of spine patients has been asked the question, do inversion tables work? The answer is, drumroll please, sometimes. A number of studies have been done to determine the effectiveness of inversion tables on acute pain and or chronic pain of the back. So there we go. So often that's the reason, right? To date, most studies, including the most well-designed studies, fail to show a significant long-term benefit to inversion therapy. Okay, I'm different from most people, different in many ways in this industry, but I'm going to pull out that final sentence. Fail to show a significant long-term. So it shows, what does that say? So it goes, maybe not significant, but some short-term benefit. So that's what so many of you are looking for with back pain. I get it. So this is where I say, listen, I don't want you to spend a crazy amount of money on an inversion table, but like so many other things, whether it's recovery or whatever it is, my philosophy is what? If it doesn't hurt you, if it feels better in the short term, I'm okay with that. But what did I just do a show about? Cause versus symptoms. If back pain is your issue and you are just doing this and getting the short-term, you know, feeling better, that's fine. I want you to feel better, obviously, and less pain, but I want you to work on the cause. And what would I recommend? Drum roll, please. Yes, those of you who have listened to my, you know, podcasts on planking and body weight exercise and everything like that, no. I want you to strengthen your back and I want you to increase your flexibility, strengthen, and increase your flexibility. Lower back, what does that mean? The exercises, the prehab versus rehab, the planks, the bridges, these simple, simple body weight exercises that when you do them a few times a week for a few minutes at a time can make a world of difference. I am standing as I do this. You are probably sitting throughout the day. Your hip flexors get tight. It pulls you forward. It causes back pain. So we need to stretch and we need to strengthen. So inversion tables, sure, do they feel better? You have a couple dollars, you're willing to invest in that to feel better in the short term? Awesome. And again, I'm making the assumption that back pain is your reason. But regardless of the reason, if it's a pain-based reason, I want you to figure out the etiology of that pain. And as I said in that podcast, cause versus symptom, one of the simplest ways to do that without trying to figure out exactly what the weakness is just do full body workouts. This is why we don't spot reduce. This is why we don't just do one body part or focus on one area. Because muscle weaknesses, muscle imbalances lead to issues. And there you go. Awesome question. Love it, love it, love it. Oh, wait, there was one final sentence. I don't want to leave this out. See, I'm always going to give you the full story. The final sentence from Spine Center of Baton Rouge. Let me read the second to last. To date, most studies, including the most well-designed studies, failed to show a significant long-term benefit to inversion therapy. But then they say, with that being said, many patients seen in a clinic setting will swear otherwise. I want you to feel better, but I also want you to deal with the cause. And it goes for so many different things. And this person had a follow-up question. It's like the press pool. Also, I had a full knee replacement. So there's a lot going on here with this person. The doctor told me not to do squats or leg presses, run or jump rope. Can you suggest any exercises to strengthen it? You all probably know by now, again, having listened to other shows about this topic, I have a big problem with doctors telling people not to squat or lunge unless they put them in knee braces and you walk around all day long with your legs perfectly straight. And actually, that's the exercise you do in therapy, isometric, one of the most common ones to strengthen the quad. Does it help? Yes. Is it super effective? No. And are we squatting and lunging all day long? Yes. So that's a huge problem. So the exercise that many of you have already done it, most likely, is that straight leg raise. Different ways to do it, but one is you lie flat on your back, legs are straight, you tighten your quads, your thigh muscles, and you lift your leg off the floor. And you hold it there, your knee is locked, and then you lower it back down. And they'll have you do a couple sets, maybe two sets, three sets, 15 repetitions, a couple times a week. That's great. But that is not enough, in my experience, to truly strengthen and deal with the fact that you are squatting and lunging all day long. Now, let's go back to the question. Do you have to do leg presses? Do you have to jump rope? No, because we're not leg pressing all day long. So, I don't need you to do that. I would like you to get to the point you could if you wanted to. But truthfully, I haven't done a leg press in years because I'm doing the other things. Just not in the gym. I don't need that. I can do step-ups and lunges and squats and so many other exercises. Just not, I did them way back in the day, but not part of my routine right now. Jumping rope. Yeah, I'd rather, if you had full knee replacement, probably shouldn't be bouncing up and down fast right away. But that is the exercise, straight leg raise. But let me just give you, this is the only study I'm going to give you in this episode, but I really thought we needed one here. The study was in February 2019, recent, Journal of Rheumatology. And the title of the study, Quadriceps Weakness and Risk of Knee Cartilage Loss Seen on Magnetic Resonance Imaging, MRI, in a population-based cohort with knee pain. Okay? Again, super complicated title, but here's what it's all about. They did isometric strength training. So isometric is just what I described. Your muscle is not lengthening or shortening, but you are strengthening it, holding, squeezing, right? 163 people aged 40 to 79. 12% of the participants had quadriceps weakness when the study began, and they were more likely to report higher levels of knee pain. There you go. The less you use a muscle, the more pain you have, the weaker it gets, the more pain you have. 12% of the participants had weakness, and they were more likely to report higher levels of knee pain. No surprise, but we need to deal with that, right? Over a mean follow-up period of 3.3 years, 15.5% of the participants experienced loss of knee cartilage. As viewed on MRI imaging, this loss of cartilage occurred in 44% of those with quadricep weakness, compared with, here we go, 11.7% of those with normal quad strength. A threefold increased risk of cartilage loss in those with quad weakness. This is one study, but it is one of many. And this is why I have such a problem with so many doctors who don't do enough to increase people's quad strength. Okay, and this one doctor around me who is one of the best of the best, and he pushes the envelope. Well, I shouldn't even say that. He does what he should. You know, he is having people do box jumps and things like that progressively with, you know, full knee replacements and things like that. You do it progressive. Okay, so let me just read that one more time. This loss of cartilage occurred in 44% of those with quad weakness, compared with 11% of those with normal quad strength. Normal. We need to strengthen. So, yes, you start with isometric strength training. You start by doing straight leg raises, the stuff you would do in physical therapy. But over time, if you were my client, we would progress to maybe squats of 1 inch, 2 inches, body weight. You're not doing full squats with 100 pounds on your back. You're not doing walking lunges holding dumbbells. You're not even doing walking lunges going deep. But we're going to do one leg exercises. We're going to do body weight exercises. We're going to slowly strengthen those quads and then over time go a little deeper. And go a little deeper. And get a little more stability. And we're going to build up your core strength. So we're going to build up total body strength, core strength, balance, but we are going to progressively squat and lunge and do things like that. Now, can everyone do those full knee replacement? Now, again, I don't know the severity of what you had done, but I do know that we're walking and lunging all day. So we need to figure out how to do that and how to strengthen around that so that you're not one of the 44% with weak quad muscles who experiences pain. Going too long, I tend to do that. I tend to get worked up. Let me just read you the conclusion, finally, that is in the abstract of that study. In the symptomatic population-based cohort, quadriceps weakness predicted whole knee and medial TF cartilage loss after 3 years. What does that mean? The weaker your quads are, the more cartilage you're going to lose. To our knowledge, this is the first study to show that a simple clinical examination of quadriceps strength can predict the risk of knee cartilage loss. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Stronger your knees are, muscles around your knee, I should say, the less likely you're going to be to have issues. And we'll leave it at that. Okay, you know what? Let's do the final break and then boom, I'm going to pick up the pace. All right, final break. We'll be right back. And we are back. Question 4 of 11. I'm going to pick up the pace. I love this one. I love them all. Hey, Tom, thanks for the previous response to my question. See, answered it in a different show. I just wanted to ask you another question about becoming a fitness professional. I'm 23 years old and just graduated from university with my degree in exercise science. I'm aspiring to be a trainer, coach, professional in the fitness industry. Ever since the pandemic, however, I feel like the industry has taken a huge hit and I don't know how to get started working. I'm currently studying for my personal trainer certification, but feel like I'm going to be lost after that. I guess my question is, how would you suggest the best way is to get into the industry, establish myself, and find some self-security? I get this question all the time. And it's a tough one, as many of them are. I'm going to pull out the final words there. Some self-security. That's hard. It's a business where if you're someone like me, you're an entrepreneur, right? Fitness entrepreneur. I will just give you my experience and what I've seen along the way. And hey, it's worked for me. And thank you for this great question. First of all, greatest job in the world. And the fact that you graduated with a degree in exercise science, you're already way ahead of the vast majority of the people in this business who don't have much education at all. It's an Instagram world, right? So that's awesome. When I started, when I said this is what I was going to do for a living, I said I'm going to get the most education, the most certifications to separate myself. I'm going to start doing more things like Ironmans and marathons to, you know, establish my credibility. And what I said was, I'm going to pick and find 10, 11, 12 different revenue streams so that if one is not hitting at any given time, I'll be okay. And so, yes, I understand what you're saying about the pandemic. Gyms are in a different state of being right now. And most people will start there as a trainer, as a group fitness instructor. But I want you to figure out what you are passionate about. What is your specialty? Are you a strength person? You did say trainer, coach, professional. So coach, what sport? Are you an endurance guy? Are you a strength person? Are you, you know, what are you a swimmer? What was your background? What are you passionate about? Because that's going to differentiate you right away. And you have to be excited to go to work. Short answer is, this is not the worst time. This is the best time ever. But you got to be hungry and you got to work hard. All these things that I sound like my dad, which isn't a bad thing. And you got to take it as a business. So I will also say that there are so many jobs. Get on Indeed.com, places like that, and just see the number of jobs, especially for coaches and things like that. And listen, yes, once the pandemic is over, fitness business is exploding and will continue to explode. Gym world, a little different. But start getting out there, start networking, but start to figure out all of your different revenue streams. So I'll give you mine and that will get you started. You know, back in the day, I said, I'm going to be a personal trainer. So that I started doing that. And then I said, you know what? I need access to more people. I'm going to start teaching classes. So I was, you know, training people in the gym. And then I was teaching classes as well. That was a regular revenue stream. The classes more so than the clients, because clients would cancel, right? There is a science and an art to all of this and a logic, right? But within that world too, I said, I'm going to differentiate myself as a trainer. And I was, I would argue, way more professional than the vast majority of people I worked with. And that helped immeasurably, right? So trainer, group fitness instructor. So now you got to look at your online presence, teach classes online if you want, coach people online. I had a really robust coaching business for many years where I would coach people. And that was just when the internet started. So there's so many different options now to make money fitness-wise through the internet and online platforms and different things like that. You know, fast forward to today, I'm now, as I've talked about, fitness expert in lawsuits. I consult for many different fitness companies, but you got to start somewhere. So start with what you're passionate about. Get on those job boards. Start looking around. Listen, at your age, I just sent out a listing. I'm sad that I'm not 23. It was to be a strength and conditioning coach for a professional hockey team. Those days have sailed, but you're right in the in that age group for that. So get on those job boards, continue to increase your education. I love that you're getting a certification. Get many, even though your education far trumps many of those certifications. And get excited. If you're truly passionate about helping people, it will really start to reveal itself. So best of luck. And let me know. I want follow-ups from you as well. All right. I'm going to pick it up. Quick question regarding marathon endurance training. I'm about to start your marathon method training. And while I understand what you say about breaking workouts up throughout the day, does the same thing apply with endurance training? For instance, if I have an 8-mile run on a day, can it be broken up throughout the day? Or is it honestly best if it's done all in one shot? Okay, this is where we can pick up the pace. Both. So yes, if you're training for an endurance event, you have to train your body to go longer periods of time. That being said, the older we get and the less resilient our bodies are, there are studies and, you know, many people have success with breaking up the workout. So in other words, I don't do all the medium runs that I used to do, the 8, 9, 10 milers, steady state. I will do 4 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon. I know for many people you're going, that's way more than I'm ever going to. I get it. But like for this person's goals, you can do that. So it's frequency of running. It's getting in the volume. But that being said, you generally still want that longer run. The most important run for endurance, or one of the most important runs as far as the endurance component comes in, is that Sunday long run for most people. But as far as the other ones, it's more the mileage. That Wednesday run for many people, which is oftentimes a 10 mile or something like that, 8, as this woman said, yeah, you can split that up. But make sure that you are training your body to go long periods of time, to train those different energy systems, the mental side, all of that stuff. But yes, get that one longer run in during the week. And for the most part, all the other ones, I'm okay with you breaking up the vast majority of them. So a little bit of both. Number 6, another one in that vein. How many days before you taper for a long race? My husband is doing an intense mountain bike race and he's planning on riding the course a week before the race. I told him it's a bad idea and he should be tapering down, but he thinks 7 days is enough time to rest. I would love to hear your opinion on this. Great question. Again, for those of you who aren't endurance athletes, a taper is basically resting up before a race. So you're decreasing your training volume so that you're ready to go, but you don't want to completely stop. So a rule of thumb, if we're using round numbers, is let's say before an Ironman, you got 4 weeks, decreasing 25% per week. So if you're training, just throw out some numbers, like 20 hours, that's a lot for most people. Let's say 15 hours normally in your peak, your highest week, then, you know, 4 weeks out, you might drop to 13 and then 10 and then 8. So less training. So your body is recovering. That being said, the more fit you are, the more trained you are, the shorter your taper will be. So generally speaking, people doing a long endurance events for the first time, it's going to be 3 to 4 weeks when they start their taper, and then 1 to 2 weeks, depending on the event and how fit the person is. But this is an imperfect science. And I will leave you with this for this question. One I've used in my books, it is better to be 10% undertrained for a long endurance event than 1% overtrained. If you're going to make the mistake and you have a long race, bike, run, whatever it is, it's not who goes the fastest, it's who slows down the least. And far too many people do far too much training in those last few weeks. Many try to cram it in. Not a good idea. So when in doubt, leave it out. And if you've done your homework, if the hay is in the barn, as we say, you'll be good. So shorter taper, the fitter you are. But when in doubt, make the mistake, err on the side of cutting down training, especially when you've been training for a really long time. But so many people do that very thing. They want to ride the course. And you're like, well, that's a really long way. But you got to experiment. You got to figure out what's right for you. But I am someone who does way less than most people. And that's one reason I'm injury-free and able to do it for a long time. Number 7, I'm just getting into exercise and saw your last post about cardio being critical for calorie burning, but I'm wondering how much and how intense it should be to actually be effective. I ask because I have asthma and it can be difficult for me to keep up with really intense stuff. Am I massively impacting the effectiveness of cardio by not being able to go as hard? Wondering if you maybe have an episode that addresses this, touches on this. Thanks. And yes, we'll be talking much more about this in different ways, but needed to answer this right away. Such a great question. Short answers, you're good. Cardio is cardio. For your goals, you want to do cardio. You want to strengthen your heart. You want to get all the benefits. And that can be lists, low intensity, steady state. Sure, HIIT training, high intensity interval training is effective and you burn a lot of calories in a short amount of time. But if you don't do that, are you still going to be able to be healthy and maintain and lose weight? Of course. Of course. So you generally want to go a little longer and more frequently and just keep moving throughout the day. It doesn't have to be super intense. And intensity and duration, right? We talk about that frequently. So if you go harder, you can go shorter. It's all about calories burned as far as the expenditure during a workout. But then to this person, it's all about hunger hormones and making better food choices because you did that walk. So the short answer is you are losing nothing. And by the way, you have, you know, something that is limiting you. So congrats on, you know, working through it. Everyone's got an issue. But I do not want you to think that you are not doing enough or you're losing anything. Okay. You want to raise your heart rate to, you know, levels that you can. You want to sustain it. You want to mix up your cardio sessions, you know, biking, running, swimming. I want you to try many different things, walking. But I want to leave you with this. What's the science with weight loss? It's the diet. Changing the diet is what generally does, you know, has the greatest impact on the initial weight loss. And exercise is what helps people maintain it. They are connected. Though, right? So when you do your workouts, when you feel better about yourself, you make better food choices, when you eat correctly, when you eat breakfast, the wheels don't fall off the same way. So as long as you are doing your cardio, your strength, changing your eating habits for the better, and doing all of those things consistently, the excessive moderation, you are good. So no, you don't have to do really intense stuff. And you can't, you know, depending on your asthma, that's fine. Get your strength in, get your cardio in, and do all of those things, and you will be super healthy. Awesome. Thank you for that great question. Number 8, I'm a 25-year-old female and recently got into weightlifting. All right, we can pick this pace up. I love these. These are great questions as well. Easier to answer. 25-year-old female, recently got into weightlifting primarily to grow muscle and lose weight. First of all, love it. Young, female, weightlifting, trying to grow muscle and lose weight. You can do both. I'm trying to do a high-protein diet aiming for 150 grams a day. I'm 165 pounds at 5'5 and lifting 4 to 5 days a week. Is this too much protein? Short answer is not in my opinion. And we've talked about how the recommended daily allowance is the lowest recommended allowance. And for someone like this who really wants to put on muscle and is exercising a lot, you know, the formula I use is about half your body weight in grams per day. And the recommended daily allowance is a little less than that. Bodybuilders, let me give you this. Bodybuilders, you're a 200-pound bodybuilder, they consume around 4,000 calories or more a day. Okay. And depending on the ratio of your macronutrients, carbs, fats, proteins, right around 30%. Again, depends on your goals and things like that. But let's use 30% protein for a nice round number. That's 1,200 calories in a 4,000 calorie diet daily. Since a gram of protein is 4 calories, that means 300 grams of protein for that bodybuilder. So that is more than 1 gram per pound. And that is what a lot of bodybuilders do. Totally different. Many are competing. Many, that's their job. It's not necessarily about health, to be honest. But again, I want you always to check with your doctor and have your levels right. But I would encourage this woman to listen to the show I did with Dr. Brad Schoenfeld, one of the premier PhD level scientists, exercise scientists studying muscle hypertrophy, which is building muscle, and protein intake. So my short answer is you're healthy. If you're healthy, your numbers are good, your blood work, all those things. And again, there's a myth about protein and too much of it being unhealthy. Studies don't support that, especially 150 grams, so less than 1 gram per pound. So I would say, in my opinion, without being able to ask any other questions, you're good. You're good. That's a great number. And I love 4 to 5 days of strength training. It's awesome. Number 9, would love an episode about home equipment, especially stuff like Tonal and your take on them versus traditional gyms. Rare that I will give a name of a specific brand out, but it bears, this question wouldn't make sense if I didn't. So there's so many different ways to strength train now at home. And Tonal, interesting, I have yet to try it. I've yet to try it, which annoys me because I want to try everything as soon as I can. Tonal is digital resistant. So it is on your wall. It is like, a mirror with arms that come out. Fitness companies have been trying to do this for a really long time. I have yet to feel what that resistance feels like because it's computerized. My guess is it doesn't feel the same as picking up a dumbbell. That being said, resistance is resistance when it comes to building strength. So my question to this person would be, what is your goal? What are your goals? Always the question, right? And this, again, when you get the people who say, oh, well, here's your absolute answer without asking any follow-up questions, that's a problem. So I haven't tried it. I'm curious as to what it feels like. But if you're trying to build strength, if you're someone's like, this, I need to do something. I'm not doing any resistance training. I think I'd like it. I've tried it and I do like it. Then that's for you. But if you're someone who is like the woman before, who's 25, she wants to build some major muscle and she's upping her protein intake, I would probably say, get a set of dumbbells, selectorized dumbbells, get a barbell, go work out at the gym. But short finish to this question is, what are you going to do if you love that piece and you know that you're going to use it frequently and you're not doing much, if any, strength training, or you know, this is just something that you know you're going to use, then that's for you. The best piece of fitness equipment is the one that you like and you use frequently. So what are your goals? And have you tried it? Have you felt it? Do you like the way it feels? I'd love to hear. Still have to try one, just haven't had the occasion, opportunity. But cardio is raising your heart rate. Doesn't matter if you do it on an elliptical, a treadmill, a stair climber. You know, we want you to strengthen your heart. Those of us who, you know, trying to help you better your life. Same thing with strength. Lift heavy things. That can be dumbbells, barbells, using machines, body weight, resistance bands. Ideally, it is a mix of all of the above. All right. So there you go. Number 10, I understand you have teenage athletes in your house. What do you encourage them to eat? Do you have them drink protein shakes, multivitamins? I have a 15-year-old football player who safely lifts and trains with the team in the off season. He would like to improve his diet to enhance his training. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Yes, I have a 14-year-old soon to be 15 and an 11-year-old soon to be 12. I have absolutely loved feeding them since they were babies as healthy as possible. It doesn't mean that we don't have that cookie drawer at home. Talked about this many times. 80-20 goes for me and my kids. I am an example to my kids that we have ice cream. We have things like that, but we have fruit and vegetables and lean sources of protein first. And I would argue that because I started them at a young age, they have a taste for fruit. Now, they're totally different. I have two boys and their tastes are totally different. So I don't force them to eat the same thing. We find healthy foods that work for them. So do they drink protein shakes? Sometimes. And generally that's after hockey. So after like a 2-hour, like a crazy long hockey practice, I have a pre-made protein shake ready to go. And for years, I've had two things ready to go for both of them. It's hydrating. So it's either water or sports drink, depending on how long they exercised and what they did. So I'm going to rehydrate them, and then I'm going to get protein in post-workout. Absolutely. So pre-done protein shakes, primarily when we're traveling, you know, on the road for sports or after a practice where, you know, I'm not waiting till we get home. They come off the ice. Boom, I hand them those two drinks, and I'm getting into the protein. When they're at home, huge breakfast, two totally different breakfasts. I've talked about my one son who's pickier, high protein waffles that my wife makes with some chocolate chips. He's not going to eat them without the chocolate chips, but there's a good amount of protein in there. So protein at every meal, whole foods, fruits and vegetables, some protein shakes. My 15-year-old occasionally will make them now, but it is a huge overlooked part of training. It is crazy how many parents push their kids so hard to sports and then feed them garbage. You have a Ferrari and you're putting in the lowest octane and not enough. I highly encourage, I don't think this person has listened to one of my first episodes, I think the first episode I did with Wendy Earlbeck, Fueling Your Young Athlete. We talk about this in much greater detail, but I wanted to answer it quickly as well. So yes, 15, and by the way, I give my 14-year-old creatine, and that's in that episode too. So protein, creatine, and multivitamins, these are the supplements that are highly researched and work. And I did, my four favorite supplements, protein, creatine, multivitamin, and you got to listen to the podcast to find out all the rest. But yes, your son, 15-year-old football player, protein, got to get an adequate protein. And again, start with that formula, half his body weight in grams per day, and maybe a little bit more, depending on how active, probably more. All right. Awesome. Awesome questions. Final one. Here we go. I was listening to your podcast today on strength training, not helping people's knees who have knee issues, but you mentioned some people not being responsive to exercise. A certain article had mentioned this and you didn't believe it. Could you please do a podcast on why it is almost impossible to lose weight when you're on antidepressants? So common as I am, and why they make you gain weight. There's a little bit more, but I want to say I kept this one to the end because it's so important. And why they make you gain weight. I have been walking, doing strength training at home prior to the pandemic, and I did Aquafit for 3 years and did not lose 1 pound. I'm 58 years young and in great health. No drinking, junk food, etc. I really watch my diet. No eating out. I just cannot lose even 1 pound. Every time I go to the doctor and get weighed, I'm in tears as my body will not shed any weight. I'm 5'7", BMI 27. I do not look overweight, but my body is totally unresponsive to weight loss. Please, can you address this? I am now 175 pounds. All right. Perfect way to end the show. First of all, I get it. I've had many friends with the same problem. Let me start by saying as well, your mental health is the most important. So I've had friends go off antidepressants because of this issue, and it wasn't a great outcome. So what is most important is your mental and physical well-being. So let me pull out this second paragraph. I am 58 years young. First of all, I love the fact you said that. 58 years young. Not old, 58 years young. And in great health. And in great health. Yes, everybody. We want to be our healthiest weight. But weight is not the be-all, end-all. Now, don't misunderstand me. When you are carrying around extra weight, extra body fat, that is an issue. Period. End of story. Full stop. What is the second biggest risk factor with coronavirus after age? Obesity. And we're going to talk a lot about that in the years to come. I will be. Okay? But I'm 58 years young and in great health. Great health. That's what matters. She even says, I do not look overweight. I do not look overweight. So BMI, yes, 27 is up there. Overweight, 25 to 29.9. But we don't know if it's muscle or not. I'm overweight. My BMI is through the roof because it doesn't take that into account. Do I think that this person most likely has some body fat? Yes, but in great health. So yes, 175 at 5'7". That's, you know, that's not way up there. And again, I don't know how much is muscle and how much is body fat. So I understand, but you women have been sold a bill of goods that that number on the scale is all that matters. So not true. You know, along with the bulk myth and the weight myth, that that's all that matters and that weightlifting is going to make you bulky and that the scale, the number on the scale doesn't, that's all that matters. I had those clients years past. They would lose two dress sizes and gain a pound or not lose a pound and not be happy. Because the number on the scale was a be-all, end-all. So you are doing great. Exercise over time, you know, hopefully, you know, who knows, with the antidepressants, exercise is a phenomenal way to combat that. And many people over time, you always do what your doctor recommends. But there are many people who have, through exercise, helped to decrease and even get off antidepressants. But your mental health comes first, and you said, I am in great health. Now, I'm going to be really brutally honest. When someone says, so no drinking, no junk food, and don't eat out, I'm going to just question that. I'm going to question that. Now, you may be totally honest, but that is rare, right? No junk food, no drinking, I get that. I still have my wine. And, you know, we all have to eat out every now and again. So I'm going to leave you with this. Having a coach, having someone, you know, I'm going to throw her name out again because I love her, but anyone like Wendy Earlbeck, having a nutrition coach just keep you accountable because we aren't aware of how much we take in and what we take in and the snacking and things like that. Now, it's about being healthy first, but you want to lose a couple pounds. I get that. So if it is body fat, again, this is tough to do without being able to ask follow-up questions, but having someone else keep you accountable can be super helpful. I talk about when I bodybuilt and things like that, I didn't realize how many bites off my kids' plates I was taking and how many sips. You know, it's BLTs, people. Bites, licks, and tastes that we don't count. Mothers especially, and I've spent a lot of time at home with my boys, given my career, and that was always, you know, a choice I wanted. And I realized, so I empathize. You got to be really aware. So my point is just, it may help you to have a coach, a nutritionist, someone, doesn't have to be many sessions, but that you check in with. And I'll leave you with one final idea. Write down every single thing that passes your lips just to see. Every BLT. But I will come back to the final thing about health. Your mental health is most important. Your physical health is super important. That number on the scale, we want it to be a healthy number, but not at the expense of antidepressants if that's what you need. So be very happy and actually listen to my podcast on ways to look at your success, to gauge the success of your exercise program other than the scale. Ways to measure the success of your program other than the scale. Because there are so many benefits that your exercise program, that your healthy eating is doing. You can be skinny on fit. We all know many of those people. And when it comes to longevity, It's about moderation. It's about movement. It's about exercise. And it's about feeling good about ourselves. So I want to encourage you that maybe that final step for you is just a little accountability. Make sure you're on the right track. Make sure the foods are the right ones for you. A little more knowledge in that world can be super helpful. All right. Ooh, that's a tough one to end up on because that's, you know, I get it. And listen, you know, one day I will talk about how exercise has helped me on the mental side in many more ways to a huge degree than I have really spoken about. But thank you for these awesome questions. Again, I will go into much greater detail on so many of these, including the last one, in future podcasts. But thank you for the questions and reach out. Tom H. Fit is my Instagram. Tom H. Fit is Twitter. Fitnessdisrupted.com. You can go right to the website. Email me through there. Brand new gym, virtual gym, taking all my content from decades and slowly putting it all up on a gym where you're going to be able to, you can now. There's some content there, but I can't tell you how much it's going to go up. Yeah, it's a monthly fee, but listen, you want accountability, you got a forum there, you can ask me questions. There's everything you need to achieve your goals there as well. And finally, the Micro Workout Plan is my most recent book. Thank you. Subscribe to the show, rate the show, comment on the show, but know that I take what I do with the utmost seriousness, and this is not selling shoes. So I'm going to bring you the best information so that you can live your best life. There are three things we control. I really want you to take this to heart. How much we move, what we put into our mouths, and our attitudes. They're all connected and they're all under your control. I am Tom Holland. This is Fitness Disrupted. Believe in yourself. Fitness Disrupted is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.